Psalm 11. In the Lord I take refuge. How can you say to my soul, flee like a bird to your mountain? For behold, the wicked bend the bow. They have fitted their arrow to the string to shoot in the dark at the upright in heart. If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? The Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. His eyes see, his eyelids test the children of man. The Lord tests the righteous, but his soul hates the wicked and the one who loves violence. Let him rain coals on the wicked, fire and sulfur and a scorching wind shall be the portion of their cup. For the Lord is righteous. He loves righteous deeds. The upright shall behold his face. So we have a psalm that the superscription tells us is a psalm of David. This is a Davidic psalm, and it's written to the chief musician, or given over to the one who in the tabernacle and then eventually the temple is the one that is in charge of the music. And in the psalm, I think that there's a nice division between verses 3 and 4 that naturally divides the text really well. And when you look at verses 1 through 3, you see that the psalmist is seeking refuge. So verses 1 through 3, he's seeking refuge. And the psalmist says that in the Lord he takes refuge. And notice that there's sort of an internal dialogue that's going on. In the Lord I take refuge. How can you say to my soul, flee like a bird to your mountain? He's probably going through a mental exercise of thinking through accusations that have been made against him and reminding himself where he stands. I take refuge in the Lord. Why are you saying I should flee like a bird to the mountain? So he reminds himself that the Lord, the covenant-keeping God, is the one who is his refuge. And then we see that this is most likely internal dialogue, because verse 2, the one that is telling him to flee like a bird, is the one that's chasing him, is one who has a bent bow. This is the one he is running from. The wicked have come against David. They're bending the bow. Arrows are fixed. David is in his sight. And David has questions about this. He has really important questions. So he's in this time of meditation. I take refuge in the Lord, and I say to myself, or others say to me, to flee to the mountain. And I look, and there are the wicked there, and they've bent the bow, and they're ready to let the arrows go and to shoot even in the dark at the upright in heart. He sees himself as the one who is at the end of this arrow. And he asks this really important question. He asks, if the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? What David is asking here is it possible that all of the promises of God come to nothing? Now, we need to understand David in the context of covenant theology. David is one to whom promises have been made that a son of his would sit on the throne forever. And David knows that. And whatever the context of this is, the superscription doesn't give us enough of a context. It just says, of David to the choir master. It doesn't tell us enough where we say, okay, here's exactly what we know is happening when David is struggling through this. But this is what we do know. David understands his theology enough to know that when God makes promises and that he is the receptor of those promises, that those promises are going to come to pass. David can think back on the covenant promise made to Adam and Eve, our first parents, following their sin, and the Genesis 3:15, the proto-euangelion, and then that promise being renewed in Noah, and that promise being renewed in Abram, and then that promise again comes to David. And David is standing there in a sense. It's like, you know, if you're watching a film and there's all of this stuff that's left undone in the film and the main character is at the end of a gun, you tell yourself, at least I do, I know he's not going to die because the movie still has an hour left. It wouldn't make sense, right? So this is something of what David is experiencing here. He's asking this question, if all the promises of God end here, what are we going to do? If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? And this is actually a perpetual question that the church seems to ask a lot. Not only in David, but throughout church history, we have that question asked. And it's asked in different ways. It's even asked now. Things are crumbling. What are we going to do? What's the church going to do? How's the church going to survive? And I'm not talking just about local church. I'm talking about the kingdom. I'm talking about the big church. And people ask that question all the time. I've read enough from many centuries of church history to find this question where I could pick it out of almost every century of church history. You know, sometimes we hear about the Reformers or the Puritans and people talk about that like it's a golden age. And they'll say, oh, if only we could think and live like them, and if we had the strength of faith, and if we believed, and yada, yada, yada. They're constantly bemoaning the state of the church. They're constantly saying, why are there so many ungodly around us? Why are there so many that are not serious about their faith? Why are there so many that do not care about the things of God? And this is a question that is asked over and over and over again throughout the church. The question is, if the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? Now, we could open that up for discussion and, you know, say, okay, if the foundations are destroyed, what are we going to do? That's not what I want to do. I want to realize that the imagery that David is giving here is something of ancient buildings that are resting on pillars. And these pillars, as they start to crumble and the building starts to shift and move and the building is getting ready to fall, you know, the structure may still be standing because there's various pillars that are holding it up. But eventually, that's going to be something that falls. Eventually, that building will fall. And that's David, what he's thinking of here. It's like he's face to face with this arrow that's going to be shot in the dark. And he knows that it's a skilled marksman that is going to be able to take him down as he's fled to the mountains. And he asks the question, what are we going to do? This building is collapsing. And I want you to understand that even though verse 3 is there and that question is there, the psalm itself gives the answer. And this is what I want you all to do. I want you to take out this as an application so that when you have friends that are bewailing the state of the church and talking about the church in miserable terms, whether that's the American church or the Western church or, you know, whatever that is, maybe their local congregation, I want you to see that in verses 4 through 7, there's an answer. And the answer is that we talk about the foundations. If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? And David himself answers that without even a selah. He doesn't even pause to meditate. Verse 4 says, the Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. His eye see, his eyelids test the children of men. The psalmist answers this question about foundations being destroyed with a reminder of where that foundation is. The Lord is in his holy temple. Nothing is crumbling. The Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord is the one who reigns over his kingdom. The light is not out in Old Testament language. You know, the light is on 24/7 in the tabernacle and then in the temple to constantly remind the people of God that God is present. God has not left. God is not asleep. And David, in a sense, from the mountain looks, and probably proverbially, you know, it's probably not literally looking towards the tabernacle, but David understands, even within his own mind's eye, that the Lord is in his holy temple. That light is on. God has not left. The foundation is still there. And the Apostle Paul picks up on this language in the New Testament when we are told, and there's other foundational language in the Old Testament as well, but that foundational language is picked up on when we're told that the church is built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets with Jesus Christ as the chief cornerstone. And that's that same reminder that the church is being built. The church is not going to crumble because Jesus reigns, because Jesus is in his temple, because Jesus is the one that governs the church. And the psalmist tells us that not only is he in his temple, but he's seeing and he's testing. He's not passive, but he's actually active in testing the children of men. Hebrews 4:13 says, "All things are naked and open unto his eyes." And that's familiar with this, isn't it? That his eyes see all and his eyes test the children of men. And in 5 through the end, still the same heading under the foundation. But what we see here is that the Lord does try. He not only just says that he's going to try the hearts of men, he does try the hearts of men. And as he sees into those hearts, he is seeing this contrast. And remember, the Psalms love contrasts. He's seeing a contrast between righteousness and violence. And for the violent, he pours out coals on the wicked. He brings judgment. And for the righteous, we again have to see imputed righteousness, something that comes from the Lord, something that comes outside of David himself. So there is that righteousness that comes from the Lord, and then there is that reward that is earned, which is the cup of wrath. Again, that points us ahead to eternal punishment as we think about the testing of all men and all women before the tribunal of God. We will stand either on our own works, on which God will pour out judgment, or we will stand on the righteousness of Christ, and we will see that we will be declared as one of the ones that the Lord loves. Verse 7 says, "For the Lord is righteous, he loves righteous deeds, and the upright shall behold his face." So why does the Lord love the righteous? He loves that reflection of himself that he has given to us. He loves that reflection of the renewed image of Jesus Christ that is in everyone who is justified by faith alone. He loves that restoration of Jesus, that reflection that we have. The upright will behold his face. This reflection of God that is righteous will be seen in the righteous as we stand before God face to face. And that's a great encouragement to David, because David understands that when this question comes, if the foundations are destroyed, what will the righteous do? He understands that that question is easily answered because God is sovereign and God reigns from his temple. And God is one who tests and tries the children of men. And he loves righteousness that is seen reflected in Jesus Christ, our Lord.